sudden rain and winter winds blowing across our land. Oh, I'm proud to match you line for line, 'cause I match you day by day all this time. When we were young, our love was such a newborn thing, like baby birds trying out brand new wings. My heart felt heat when you touched my hand. Swear you opened mountains in the promised land. Through the years, both our hands have known the feeling of newborn children that have been our own. Cold, hard dirt in the morning light, working this land to make it go right. I'd not trade these hands and heart of mine for the softer ones of younger time. You love my life, then you love these lines. The two are all entwined. For I'm a handsome weathered woman, as you're a handsome weathered man. Together we worked in the sun and the rain, and the winds blowing across our land. Oh, I'm proud to match you line for line, 'cause I'm matching year by year all this time. Tears filled his eyes as in the kitchen light he touched hands. 30 years of passion flowing between this woman and this man. There were lonely years full of bitter tears and work that never seemed to end. Now their hair's grown silver since the day they went, and when he touched her arm this time he said, you're such a handsome weather woman, such a weary weathered man. Together we worked in the sun and the rain, and winter winds blowing across our land. Oh, I'm proud to match you line for line, proud to match you year by year all this time. Tragedy waiting to fall. It's just a moment in time on a long, long line when it seems it's been worth it all. Now a light burns soft in a bedroom loft where the winds blow cold outside, with love in their hearts and heat on their skin. You can hear them whisper softly again. You're such a handsome weathered woman, you're a handsome weathered man. Together we worked in the sun and the rain, and winter winds blowing across our land. Oh, I'm proud to match you day by day, proud to love year by year all this time.
Rising so far. surrounding me. It just won't let me, just won't let me be a little passage of time. Till I hold you right, you'll be my sweet woman, rising so fine. A little passage of time. Till I hold you right, you'll be my sweet woman, woman.
That was Chris Williamson from Blue Rider, The Changer and the Changed. That was called Sweet Woman. Before that, Handsome Withered Woman by Kathy, oh Lord, Kathy somebody, I'm sorry, Kathy, I don't have the album in front of me. It's funny though, when I was picking out my songs tonight, or this afternoon, to realize how very many songs there are by women that are story songs, that are stories about women that they have known, or women either in their families or their friends or lovers or whoever. And I think that's kind of neat. I was reading some lyrics. I have played about one 20th or 30th of what I brought in. And let me tell you what I just read. That was a piece by Ethel Portnoy called A Wreath for Sylvia. Was in a collection of writing from Holland and Flanders that was put together in 1979. It was another one of those wonderful periodicals that I found at my last job, which I have left now, and I'm sort of floating in space until July, the end of July, when I take over, when I start in my new job. And it's really strange not having a schedule to go by. You know, you get up in the morning and you go to the bathroom and you drink your grapefruit juice and your coffee, and you listen to certain things on the radio, and then you get dressed in a certain order and run for the certain bus that you get on and work and then come home. And it's a little odd not having that structure right now. So I'm sort of free-floating. I have been for the last week, and I intend to get it together and get some stuff done before I have to go back to work. You know, there's certain things that you just don't have time for in your life, like straightening out your closet and ironing and things like that. So I'll get to do all that before I have to sign myself over to wage slavery again. One thing I would like to ask, oh, by the way, you're listening to Heresy. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I will be here next week and the week after that. My next show deals with dreams. So if anybody wants to do a little extracurricular work in listening to the show, make it a point this week to remember some dreams. I have trouble remembering mine, and I don't know why. I have some theories on it. People have told me some theories on it. But I have a passage, a chapter, in a book by Robin Morgan, who is the editor of Ms. Magazine, who has been an editor and a poet and a writer and an activist for many, many years. She is an absolute stone hero of mine. And I have a book of hers called The Anatomy of Freedom, which I have been painfully reading page by page, usually on the bus, for a long time now. I carry it with me. I feel like it's part of me. And in there is a dialogue between her, dialogue she wrote between herself and her dream self. And I thought it was so wonderful when I read it that I've decided to base a whole show around it. I'm also going to read some more Anais Nin. People have written and called and have told me that they really liked that show an awful lot. That was back in May, I believe. And since Anais Nin wrote a lot of very dream-like fiction, this will fit in fairly well. She inspired me greatly when I read something she said late in her life when she was living in California, that when she was young, all of her critics criticized her for not writing stories that had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And she couldn't be published because her fiction just sort of poetically wandered from place to place like a dream does. And she was turned down and couldn't be published. And now, she was saying at the end of her life, she's considered such a great writer and she teaches writing in California. What happened? And since my own fiction tends to be that way, very unformed, I like it better that way. I'm freer that way. It comes out better that way. I realize that I may indeed have some chance in the publishing game someday, but not right now. I have one more thing to read. Actually, I had two, but I had a chuck one. I will never chuck anything. It will come back to haunt me like a bad bologna sandwich, and you too. It'll come back. I'll use it on another show some other time. This is a piece by Candace Kahn called Beginnings, and this, I did not write down the publication it came from, but it came from another one of those very prevalent women's publications in the early 70s, where a bunch of women got together, contributed material, typed it, had it, and drew things, had it printed, bound, stapled, put a cover on it, and sold it for a dollar. They did most of the work themselves, including probably the printing, and certainly the stapling, and all that, and it was done on no budget at all, which I think is marvelous, because that's how I put out my own magazine, called Metis. This is a short vignette about a woman. Turns out it's the writer's mother. And it's about nothing special. And again, ordinary women do lead extraordinary lives. And I think this is a pretty good description. Beginnings by Candace Kahn. She was taught that she was bright and self-sufficient, that she was an individual, competent human being. She was taught, her father claimed, always to think for herself. When she had grown some and wrote an illegal newspaper in high school, her parents told her action was irrational and immature. When she had grown enough to believe that no one ought to be imprisoned, they told her she was close-minded and simplistic. When she argued that violence was not always wrong, they told her bitterly to read Mein Kampf. She had two sisters. Their greatest pleasure at night when they were young was to take off their father's shoes and fetch his slippers. I never knew my father as part of life every day. I never even associated him with work. He simply wasn't there. I didn't think about where he went or what he did. He was still sleeping behind a door I didn't think about when I left for school, and he wasn't there when I got home. My mother went to see the doctor twice a week. I asked her once what for, and she said, oh, some kind of problem. Her psychoanalysis lasted 4 years, I found out later, and did no good. When she got excited during informal debates at dinner and her voice began to rise, her father was wont to quote, "Sweet and gentle was her voice, the most lovely thing in a woman." She used to wonder in despair if she would ever fall in love, if a man would ever come to save her from the meaninglessness of life. She devoured teenage romance novels and later decided it had been the most destructive thing she'd ever done, because they stayed with her. In eighth grade, a gym teacher gave lessons on how to drop one's glove gracefully in order to stall for time should one's date not open one's car door. She'd walk two hallways out of her way between classes in hopes of gaining sight of her most recent crush. She cried often, at night, alone. Her mother was working and her sisters needed caring for and food needed to be bought and cooked. She was the eldest, so she never went to friends' homes after school like everyone else. Instead, she went home to her initiation into the skills of womanhood. She never went out. She was unhappy, yet she never really wanted to date. She had no idea of what she would say, of what there would possibly be to talk about. The authorities she read with friends taught them to ask questions about the boys' interests, always to show curiosity, concern. She didn't care for mechanics or sports, and she couldn't imagine a boy with any interests other than those. But she learned to become attentive, sensitive, mysterious, silent, attentive. That was a piece called Beginnings by Candace Cohn. 6:53, almost 6:54 on a Sunday morning. I think I got sidetracked before when I was talking about not attending the homecoming parade tomorrow. But if you have, I strongly urge you not to attend. Don't make the mistake of going to the anti-parade protests, because there will be such a froth and frenzy of patriotism, flag-waving, chest-beating tomorrow that I fear for anyone who dares talk the other way. Just stay home. Just say no. Just go to work. Leave it all alone. Do not bring your body to participate. Non-violent non-participation is about, to me, that's the order of the day. And so says Sharon Griffiths on Heresy at 6:55 exactly in the morning. If any of my listeners, you out there, wake up, fall out of bed, get up, I'm talking to you. If anyone taped the last show I did, which was the third week in May, not the last week of May, but the week before the last Sunday. I can't remember these things. I was not able to get a tape of that show, and I have been taping my shows this time. Cosmic Debris, I never did. The Dragon's Dancing, I never did. Any of my other shows, I never did. But I started to. I got in the habit, and like any habit you get into, when you miss one, you get upset. So I, if anyone did, if they could send me the cassettes, I will send blank cassettes back to them and thank them very heartily and grovelingly over the phone, over the air. Also, postcards, anybody? I got no letters this week. I got no postcards this week. I am very, very perturbed about this. You can write to me at WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, 10018. Postcards are preferable, but I love letters too. The name is Sharon, Sharon, Griffiths, G-R-I-F-F-I-T-H-S, as in Sam, Pay your pledge, please. Please, please, please. We fell so short, and we went so broke bringing you decent coverage of the Persian Gulf thing that we need it. We're going to have to come back probably and beg and grovel again in August because everything shuts down in the summer. We go thoroughly broke in the summer. I'll be back next week talking about dreams. Talking about dreams. Until then, take good care and have some good dreams. See you in a week. Talk to you in a week. Bye-bye.
Sunday morning's a special on WBAI. Tune in at 7 a.m. for Through the Opera Glass, 2.5 hours of the most adventurous opera show on radio. Then, at 9:30, hear of a Sunday morning, early music with literate, loving commentary from Chris Wendt. So, start the week right with Through the Opera Glass from 7 to 9:30 a.m. and Chris Wendt's Hear of a Sunday Morning from 9:30 to 11:30. Some of the best music in New York on listener-sponsored WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Good morning. You've got your dial set to 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. Through the Opera Glass, a weekly feature of this station, was pre-recorded and originally aired June 11th, 1989. Today's host and the host on June 11th, 1989 was Michael Scarola. And now, Through the Opera Glass, with your host, Michael Scarola.
Good morning, and welcome to Through the Opera Glass. I am your host, Michael Scarola. This morning, we present a special birthday tribute to the great American mezzo-soprano, Risa Stevens, who we just heard singing Connais-tu le pays from Amoir Thomas Mignon, the role of her Metropolitan Opera debut on December 17, 1938. The orchestra was conducted by Frida Weissman. Risa Stevens was born of Norwegian descent in New York City on June 11, 1913. She attended New York public schools and then enrolled in the Juilliard School of Music, where she studied voice with Anna Schoen-René. In 1935, she went to Vienna, where she studied with Marie Gunthal Schroeder and Herbert Graf, the noted director. She made her debut as Mignon with the Prague Opera in 1936 and remained a member of that company until 1938. While still with the Prague Opera, she appeared as a guest artist at the Vienna State Opera in the role of Octavian in Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier. In 1938, she was signed for leading roles at the Teatro Colón, and in the last season before World War II, she made her debut at Glyndebourne as Cherubino in Mozart's Le Nozze di Figaro. At a Saturday matinee on December 17, 1938, she made her debut with the Metropolitan Opera as Mignon in a cast that included Ezio Pinza and Richard Crookes. The following Monday evening, she sang her first Octavian in the house to the marshalling of Lotte Lehmann and the ox of Emmanuel Liszt. And it is from this opera that our next two excerpts derive. We shall hear the presentation of the Rose from Act II and the final duet from Act III. Erna Berger joins her in both excerpts, as does the RCA Victor Orchestra, conducted by Fritz Reiner, in recordings made on April 5th, 1951.